Okay, everybody. Hello once again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop WMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. On today's show, it's Copyright Forum, and everybody calls during the Copyright Forum because everybody's got a poem if you went to a private college, or a poem if you went to a public college, or something that they want to make sure, you know, is properly protected. It's great. To answer our questions, we have our usual great panel, minus one, Polly Law. Paul Rapp specializes in intellectual property law, including copyright, trademark, internet, art, and entertainment matters. He's also an adjunct professor of copyright and art and entertainment at the Albany Law School. Does a lot of other things, too. He's a columnist and the rest. Bill Westwood is one of the country's leading medical illustrators, if not the leading medical illustrator, and a professional member and past president of the Association of Medical Illustrators. Give us a call at 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Now, yesterday, guys, it just so happens that my friend Meyer Cutts was on with me, and Meyer Cutts talked about, going to Amazon to get your book published. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can get a book published with photos and everything for, $500. Pretty good. People writing memoirs and the rest of it.
Right.
And there were several questions that people asked when they called up that, frankly, we didn't know how to answer. They had to do with whether you could use somebody else's photo on the front cover, or not. My instinct was no.
Right.
And whether clip art, from the various clip art places was usable. Paul, you want to take a crack at that? 1-800-348-2551. Now, listen, at the end of the show, every phone is going to be ringing. You know it, and I know it. If you want to get on, now's the time to do it. Don't be crying at me later. Go ahead, Paul.
Yeah, I've been doing more and more of this. People who are self-publishing call me up and ask me to read the book and make sure there aren't any issues in it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and there's, and there's a lot of issues. I mean, you know, talking about real people, for example, depending on who they are and what you say, it could be an issue.
Right.
Illustrations is and photographs is, the copyright stuff that we talk about here every time. Talking about brands, there's all kinds of issues that could jump up, and you just have to be careful.
So give us some examples.
If you are writing about a real event and you were talking about a person who is not famous,
and not dead,
that's important. And you put them in an unflattering light. Even if you're telling the truth, even if you're telling real stuff about them, if they're not a public person and you're holding them up to ridicule, that's a violation of their privacy.
Particularly in New York.
Uh-huh. Bill, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say New York has some stringent privacy laws, as does California. And I think about 18 or 24, something like that, or other states. Not every state has the same stringent privacy laws.
Most of them have some kind of a common law, though.
Right. I mean,
they may not have a statute, but every state is going to have some common law of privacy. And so you need to be careful with that stuff.
Well, yes. I'm fascinated by that, and we have you here, Mr. Lawyer. I recently heard from a politician. Now, that's a public person, obviously.
Yeah.
And I was instructed to, we wish to have the right, if you're going to say anything that's even remotely negative of us, for you to come to us first. What's that all about?
That's about Stalinist Russia.
Politics.
Isn't it? If you're a public person, you can say almost anything about someone, unless it's absolutely untrue and you do it, you can render an opinion about anything about a public person.
Well, I once had a newspaper guy here in Albany decide that he wanted to, quote, get me. And we knew that. We knew what it was. It was years and years and years ago. And he unleashed two or three reporters and an editor on me. And they looked up and down and this and that. And I went to a lawyer because I was scared to death about this guy. And he said, write him a letter and say in the letter, I wish to be able to answer any factual questions, that you may raise, which have these implications. And I thought it was a great strategy.
Yeah.
And so they did, so that before they unload this garbage on you, that you have a right to sort of respond and to say, And so it would. What is it that you have to do to prove that there's negligence in an article if you are not a public person?
Libel, you mean libel or slander?
Yeah, so libel or slander.
Or a violation of
our privacy.
Privacy. Right. Well, you would, I think at some point you'd tell them, well, it's you know, what you said is absolutely untrue. You know, what's your basis for believing that?
But at least if you have said to them, come to me first and on paper, and they didn't do it, then it really shows that they were negligent, doesn't it?
It depends what their original sources were. You know, they may not. They may not.
Well,
care.
I remember very well that when the article came out, and it wasn't much. It was full page, a big picture of me, and perhaps my nose was a little longer than it should have been. and it said, his nasal voice rises and falls while he's on the radio. That was great.
Okay. All right.
Say it like it's a bad thing.
Let's go to Malcolm in Sunderland, Massachusetts. 1-800-348-2551. Malcolm.
Dr. Shartok and the panel, thank you so much. How are you?
We're good. How are you?
I'm all right.
Great. I was in a class, a computer class the other day, and the subject of copyright came up. Nobody knew very much about it. And so the idea was, of course, referring to software. And it kind of occurred to me at that point as I was thinking it through that software, although they apply, at least as far as I understand, copyright law to it, is a little bit more like, shouldn't it be more like patent law? Because of function?
Yep. But the software lobby was able to prevail on Congress to, you know, throw software into the mix of things covered by copyright, although they didn't really say what exactly was covered by copyright. So you can register your software with the Copyright Office, and they will take it and give you a certificate. But courts have sort of gone every which way trying to decide what it is that's actually covered, because like you said, it's good software is going to be purely functional, and that would be something that would normally be subject to a patent, copyright covering creative works.
What does that mean, purely functional?
Functional patents cover functional working inventions as opposed to creative materials that are on paper or in some other medium.
I'm sorry, perhaps I'm a little more stupid than I think I am, but the word functional in this case means?
A product, working.
A machine.
Or a set of directions.
Right.
Or, you know, as I tell my artists, patent covers useful things and copyright covers useless things.
You just lost nine clients.
There goes our
Can
audience.
Can I do a quick follow-up with that?
Sure.
Go ahead, sure.
As a split major, kind of, I also do music. In terms of chord progressions and rhythms versus much more specific melody lines, it almost crossed the line into the function thing we just talked about. But obviously, leaving that aside, just on more like on the surface of it, are there people who copyright chord progressions and rhythms?
You're talking to the right guy because Paul is a guitar player.
I'm a drummer.
He's a drummer.
I'm the guy that follows guitar players around. Rarely. I mean, usually a music copyright is going to cover the melody and the lyrics. And unless the chord progression is extremely unique or the rhythm, I mean, obviously, if you had a percussion ensemble playing, you know, that you could register that.
Sure.
You could patent it?
You could copyright it. As a general matter, no. I mean, if you took a Beatles song and took out the singing and tried to register it, as a composition, you would have a hard time, I think, getting anywhere.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. But meaning if you liked the chord progression and wrote a new melody and really loved it and all that kind of stuff, you don't really need to worry if it happened to be used somewhere else.
Probably not. I mean, when we were recording, we used to do this ska version of Sam Cooke's Just Another Saturday Night. And then the lead songwriter came in with a whole bunch of new lyrics for a song called Gimme the Girl about sex and advertising. And, and you know, out it went. And then when, you know, the first time I got played on the radio, John Cooper was at WQBK at the time. He played Give Me the Girl, and he followed it with Just Another Saturday Night. And I was like, oh, God, he's busted.
Okay. Hey, listen, Malcolm, we gotta let you go, okay?
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Okay, let's go to Pat in Ballston Spa, 1-800-348-2551. Go, Pat.
This is Scott.
Oh, I'm so sorry. We got it wrong, but that's okay. We're just going to take away some of the salary of the volunteer.
Go, Scott.
My question is, I've been thinking about making a picture calendar for a long time that would feature like aerial photographs of different resorts, and I'm wondering what kind of permissions or issues there might be if I were to do that. How involved would the resorts have to be made?
I don't think at all. I don't think they'd be. You would have to.
Google Map does it, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I don't think you would have a problem with it. And where would you get the? I mean, the issue would be with, you know, who actually created the image, the
right.
photographer or whoever.
Yeah, I was thinking of shooting my own in an ideal world.
Yeah, yeah. And so you wouldn't need their permission at all.
New York Post does it every day. They show some starlets. Spread on Montauk Point, you know?
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the Saratoga New York State Racing Association went after an artist a few years ago over similar types of things, and I think they lost in court.
It was the paintings or the photographs.
The paintings, she was using them on coffee cups and things like that.
Right, they were her paintings.
It was the additional.
I was counsel on that.
Oh, you were counsel there. Okay, so you're the one qualified to speak.
Yeah, and I don't remember. I think they got. I don't think the case went all the way because I think the artist got so disgusted she just said forget it, and she hasn't painted at Saratoga since.
Right. She's doing beautiful stuff elsewhere.
Yes, she is. But that was never resolved. But if they had fought, she would have obviously prevailed. I mean, there was they were suing because she had the Naira logo in a painting.
Yeah,
you know.
But other landmarks like the Empire State Building and other places have tried to keep photographers from photographing the building. I think basically if it's a public. Facility.
Right.
What if it's copyrighted? What if the name is copyrighted? So
you can't copyright a name.
The trademark.
The trademark.
The trademark. Yeah.
If you're portraying a.
There was a story this morning, Paul, on the radio on NPR about veterans and using the name of whatever that was that veterans use the GI Bill. GI Bill and somebody had usurped that and they have now copyrighted or something. I don't know.
Trademark
it. Yeah.
But it, I mean, if you're portraying something that's in a publicly viewable space,
why not?
You can show that.
But what if you put Naira at the bottom of it?
The other question would be obviously they have their own logos and name of the resort and stuff, and I wasn't sure how far you could go with.
Well, you couldn't use their logos in terms of the name, Paul.
You could show their logos in a photograph. I mean, because especially if you're viewing it from a public from a public place.
Okay.
So that's okay.
It's defensible. Hey, Scott, we got to let you go. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. 1-800-348-2551. You got a very good chance. In fact, an absolute chance of getting in right now. 1-800-348-2551. Take it away, Zach.
Support for WAMC comes from Kingsway Community Schenectady, New York, offering care and services to area seniors since 1975, including nursing home, rehabilitation, and more, caring in the family tradition, kingswaycommunity.com. Capcom Federal Credit Union, offering home mortgages, auto loans, checking, financial planning, and more, capcomfcu.org. the Albany Academy and Albany Academy for Girls, single-gender education for boys and girls for nearly 200 years, informational lunch on us session tomorrow, albanyacademies.org. The Blue Bonnet Diner, Northampton, since 1950, offering breakfast, lunch, and dinner, banquet facilities seating 150, banquet menus, bar services, and dance floor, bluebonnetdiner.net. And Spectrum 8 Theaters, Albany, showing Hollywood, American, independent, and foreign films. Their Ultraviolet Cafe is next door for before or after the show. Open daily, spectrum8.com.
Is that you? 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Paul, we have some calls coming in now, but I wanted to ask you very quickly, what's going on in Saratoga tonight?
Tonight I'm going to be giving a talk about legal issues confronting artists, and that's going to be at the Art Center on Main Street in Saratoga Springs.
At the Art Center, and it's going to be, so give us an example of what you're going to be talking about.
I'm going to be talking about mostly copyright and sort of the origins of it and what it's for and what artists can do to protect them, you know, protect their works, and, you know, what to do about the internet and all that stuff. And that's at 6 o'clock this evening.
Okay. And Westwood 2, what do you have?
I got nothing right now.
You have nothing self-serving to say?
Nothing self-serving.
Oh, good. Good then. Okay. Here the results are coming in from the outer precincts right now, and we're on to Stephanie, who's on the Taconic Parkway. I hope not.
I hope I don't lose you, Alan, because you know what self-service is like. We're on our way to New York City.
Okay.
But, you know me, and I am a travel expert, and on the subject of taking public buildings and public spaces and then using them in something like your own calendar for whatever purpose, or to promote some clothing on a model standing in front of the Acropolis, or to sell cigarettes or something in a magazine ad. The Greek government owns the copyright for all of the historic buildings in Greece. And they have shut down big people, I mean, big, huge corporations who threw the Acropolis into the background.
Well, can you pay them? Stephanie, can you pay them money for it?
Yes, you can get permission.
Well, they need the help. The Greeks need help.
Right. Well, this predates, you know, needing help. I mean, this is an old law. But you can get permission, but they don't always give it. And in general, they don't give it. If you are promoting travel and tourism to Greece, it's another story. But if you're there, you know, to promote your new branded iconic pleated skirts or something, it's not going to happen.
That's interesting.
So they also feel that it's a degradation.
That's what I was going to say.
Of the sanctity of those historic sites.
Yeah.
And they're right, by the way.
They're trying to protect the dignity their heritage. And I didn't know about that. That's interesting. But
It's interesting Stephanie raises this, because I go to my favorite theater, the Triplex Theater in Great Barrington. You go there sometimes, don't you, Paul?
Yes, I do.
And then I'm sure you've seen in the beginning they put the slides up, you know?
Right.
And there's a slide that shows Clint Eastwood's face, you know, and for some place. Now, that would have to be, you'd have to buy that image, wouldn't you?
And this was advertising something?
Yes.
Yeah, you would have to get, the permission of the photographer and Clint Eastwood's permission.
Yeah, you'd have to license.
I think I know what the product service business you're referring to. They also use Yoda.
Yeah, they use
Spielberg
Yoda.
Spielberg would never allow that.
Yeah.
Never. You know, they just glummed that and ran with it. They did Yoda. They did other.
You get it, but Gump. Stephanie, wait.
Stephanie.
Wait a minute. Guys, just so you know about this, just so we can talk about this for a second, when they do something like that, usually what happens is if anybody gets wind of it, they say cease and desist, right?
Yeah, right.
Absolutely.
And then you cease and desist. So you get away with it till you get away with it.
Right.
But you could be sued for damages, couldn't you?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
For a couple of different reasons.
Well, Stephanie, we thank you for the very interesting phone call. Thanks again. Appreciate it.
Pleasure is mine. See you at Tanglewood.
Okay.
Now, there was a second question up, but she threw it out.
What it means is somebody has hung up the phone.
Phone before. Okay.
Yeah. Now, look, folks. We're a little disturbed here. I'll be honest with you. Paul and Bill and I, we're used to all the phones ringing all the time.
It's usually wall to wall.
Yeah, people want to know how to protect, you know, whatever they've got. And today, it's not happening. So the only variable we've discussed is that the speaker on the speaker's corner was boring. And people all hung up and walked away from their radios. Or.
Or
Polly's not here.
Yeah.
And people, maybe that's it. But I doubt it. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Mary in Kingston. Mary, you're on.
Hi, thank you. I'm interested in if I have to obtain rights. I'm interested in adapting an old film, which in itself was adapted from an old play and even perhaps an older silent film. The creator took parts of each and added maybe a third of his own. But to adapt this second film, do I have to obtain the rights to adapt it into a musical?
Yes, I probably, if it's still covered by copyright. How old is the film?
It's from the late 20s, okay. Early 30s.
Wouldn't, I mean, chances are...
Wouldn't that be in okay at this point?
No, at this point, the public domain has been frozen because of the Sonny Bono Act. And at this point, if it was published before 1923...
Wait, you can't get away with that. What's the Sonny Bono Act again?
That extended everyone's copyrights by 20 years. Everybody's.
Now, what if it's a copyright from a foreign company? That extends it at, I think it's, 78 years after the death of the last contributing author?
Boy, I don't, it, I get, I think that might depend on what country it was
right.
Registered
I'm
in.
Right, that's what I investigated, and that's what their country says. After this is a film, so they consider films not an auteur director, but everyone as a collaborator. Collaborator died in 1978 or something.
What country was this?
France.
France, which has very strong copyright protections.
You know, if the film
is. You happen to know the web. Who I would go to, the French government source that monitors copyright?
Well, it's probably the copyright owner, probably the studio. And, you know, they might be willing to grant you the rights to, you know, write a musical. They might say, go ahead, if the work is that obscure. I would try to find out who owns the rights to that film right now.
Okay, now, are the rights to the film, that's not the same thing as the person who distributes the film.
The person
distributes
who,
is like a mechanical license, is it not?
Right, but the person who distributes the film will know who owns the copyright because that's
okay.
Where they got the right to distribute it from.
Uh-huh, so, that's true.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. Okay, well, thank you.
And Mary, the French aren't always that easy to deal with. So.
No, I know. Yes. I don't think that either.
Thank you, Mary.
Good luck.
There's a prevailing thing happens right now. You see it maybe sometimes on Broadway. I don't know how far they go, but they just say, okay, you can take a film and adapt it into a musical, and I don't know at what point they go after the rights.
Well, that's an interesting point.
It's kind of like a mentality that, oh, it's up for grabs.
Yeah, I mean, you know, usually you'll do an option deal where you'll have so much time to actually, you know, put this thing
and
on stage.
And if you don't get a bite, then it expires.
Mary, I am so sorry to tell you this, but there are now five people on the phone.
All
you've
right,
done it.
Bye.
It was your
bye.
Scintillating question that did it. Thank you, Mary.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Which leaves one free phone open, 1-800-348-2551. We'll go to Chandra in Troy. Chandra, you're on.
Hello, guys.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, I'm not sure if you can help me, but my grandfather was a naturalist for the Audubon Society back in the 60s, and he filmed exclusively for them and went on the road with his films and gave lectures on 16-millimeter film, you know, the old film projectors.
Right.
So he's passed away, my grandma's passed away, and my mom has been holding on to these films, and we think that we can donate the films because they all have an Audubon header on them. But we just don't know if we can sell them, if someone was interested in buying them, or if someone gained possession of them. And I guess you can make pictures out of the films. You know, you could clip things and then create this poster work. I mean, are we infringing on a copyright, or what would we do?
You're not. I don't think you're infringing on a copyright if you just sell the film.
If you just sell the
because that's property. That's property that you own.
It's the first sale doctrine. You
right, like when you buy a book.
Okay.
But making copies of it
right.
Would be something, and it sounds like probably Autobahn would own the copyrights. If your father was an employee of Autobahn,
Was he an employee or was he working for them on a freelance basis?
I'm not sure. Like I say, everybody that knows anything is gone or doesn't have the right information, I don't think. He's my grandfather.
Which, in fact, is in your favor.
Yeah. But could you not contact someone at the Autobahn Society? And
to which they'll say, oh, yeah, we own that.
Yeah, exactly. Paul, on there. That's our copyright.
But Paul, wouldn't they have to provide proof of registration in order to? I mean, because if they weren't registered formally, that was pre current copyright law.
If it was done before 78, yeah.
If they were not registered and they were published without registration, then they're in the public domain.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Yeah,
that's
okay.
Probably
but of
true.
Course, you got to find that out,
yes.
Right?
And it's the finding out what Chandra is saying is so dangerous.
But I don't see why it's dangerous necessarily.
Well, you go to them and you say you own it, and they say yes. We own.
But you could ask for proof. You could ask for copyright registration. You could demand some type of proof. In other words, they can't just. I wouldn't stop at just having them say, oh, yeah, we own that.
Well, let's just play it out for a moment. You call them and you say, oh, yeah, we own it. And you say, give me proof, and they say no. And what are you going to do?
Then you call Paul Rapp and say, Mr. Rapp, write these guys a letter and put them in their place.
Well, you can go down to Washington to the copyright office, and they have this gigantic library of card, little card catalogs. And you can go and try to find, you know, who.
Hey, Chandra, I'm with you. We'll talk. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Thanks for your time, guys.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Good
luck. It is a travesty that the copyright office does not have those things digitized.
They only go back to the 80s at this point. But
that's Congress's fault. That's not the copyright office's fault.
Yeah, somebody probably lobbied them. Let's go to Zach on the Mass Pike. Hey, Zach, I presume you're doing it hands-free?
Of course I am.
Of course. Yeah, go ahead.
I have a question. Let's say I sent an invention like about 2005, 2006. It was basically the tablet. That I had sent to a company called Davison. Mine was a little different. Mine was more of a notebook style where you would have two screens and it was for educational purposes, but I did name it the tablet. Is there a statute of limitations or do I have any grounding whatsoever for the name and the product?
No.
No.
Nope.
And ideas in and of themselves are pretty much unprotectable.
Well, that'll teach me.
Why couldn't he have named it, copyrighted it, the tablet?
He could have trademarked the name.
Trademarked it.
Yeah.
He could have trademarked
it. Yeah, it was basically money at the time. If I had the money, I would have patented it. But
yeah, and you could patent the device itself if it was patentable,
obviously it was. So.
Hey, Zach, thanks a lot. Get your hands back on the wheel. Goodbye.
Thank you, Zach.
1-800-348-2551. There are two free phones. And let's go to John in Charlottesville. I think it's Charlottesville. All right. Is it Charlottesville, John?
Yeah, it's Charlottesville.
Okay.
Beautiful Charlottesville, of course.
Oh, beautiful Charlottesville, the only one in America.
Absolutely.
But they stole the sign.
Right.
Oh, no. So, okay, go ahead.
So my question is about the permission that I need as a person who's... I'm a freelance film producer, and I will produce something for a client. They will then post it, say, on YouTube as part of their promotion. I can incorporate that into a personal website that doesn't have any other connection except that when you go to my website, you will see that video. But it's literally being channeled through YouTube onto my site. I need permission to use that material in my own promotion, even though it was just done work for hire.
Well, it was done work for hire?
it was done for hire. I do not own the copyright on that material. The company that I've done the work for does.
Okay.
They've then posted it on YouTube. It's very easy now through different web programs to just essentially channel that content directly through my website. If I want someone to come to my website and take a look at different things that I've created for various clients.
Yeah, I think it's okay because they've put it on YouTube and you're just incorporating, embedding the YouTube video into your website.
But why not be safe? I assume you did a good job for this company and they were happy with it.
Absolutely. Yeah,
well,
that's not a problem.
So ask them permission. Just get a broad permission for your use of this material for your own promotional purposes.
It's like a portfolio piece,
right?
And sort of in the industry, graphic art, in almost any kind of industry,
there are some companies that won't let you use it on.
Yeah,
on your
I know there are.
I don't blame them.
But,
although I have to tell you that WAMC gets asked this every day.
Uh-huh.
Can we use this, material on our website? An interview I may have done with somebody. We always say yes.
Mm-hmm.
Why would we say
yes? Right. But he's the creator. Which gives him extra.
I'm the creator too. I was the interviewer, for example, on an
okay.
hour. Yeah, so yes. I think you've got to follow the rule of no, which is almost every answer is no.
Meaning
no. No, you can't.
So for example, if they say, well, you have a. I encounter this with one client that says, I have a non-exclusive right to use that material in my own self-promotion for 2 years, and that's it. But it seems to me that might apply if I literally have that content and I'm using it on my site, but let's say I'm the one who's posted it and downloaded it onto my site and I'm using it,
right.
As opposed to linking to where they have already publicly posted that material, and all I'm doing is just, as I said, sort of feeding it through my site. Is there a difference?
Yeah,
legally,
courts have said, and I haven't looked at this recently, but courts have universally said linking is fine. If you just have a hyperlink to take somebody somewhere to look at something, that's fine. It's when you actually incorporate it into your own site. Except with YouTube, it's very easy to embed. Is that what you're talking about, where it just says embed this and it gives you the code?
It actually literally links. This is there are a lot of easy website creation programs,
mm-hmm.
and what they do is you have a little viewer window, let's say, on your site, and literally all you have to do is put embed the code in there, and when someone looks at your site, they'll see that video on your site playing through your site. Now, if they, double click on it or they go a little deeper, they can see that it's posted through YouTube. The appearance when somebody goes to your site is that you personally have downloaded it onto your own server, say, and are feeding it through some proprietary.
Okay, listen, we got to take a break. So somebody got a definitive answer here?
I'm going to go out on a limb here because I'm really not sure, but I think if it clearly shows that it's on YouTube, I think you're going to be okay. I think if it doesn't, you start getting into a little more deceptive territory.
I would follow the Shartok rule of no. Until you find out. talk to you later. Bye.
Good luck, John.
1-800-348-2551.
Ricky and Bill and Michael and Bill. Stay right there. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Lori Stillwell, CPA PC, providing tax and accounting services for businesses and their owners in Saratoga Springs and beyond, stillwellcpa.com. Hildene, the Lincoln Family Home, Manchester, Vermont, featuring a 1912 Christmas in the historic home for the month of December, open daily year-round, 9:30 to 4:30, hildene.org. Cafe Capriccio, offering Tuscan Italian cuisine since 1982 with holiday travel tours to Tuscany, including organic vineyards in Chianti, in Albany and Saratoga, cafecapriccio.com. Miss Hall School, Pittsfield, Massachusetts, a boarding and day school for girls in grades 9 through 12, Miss Hall School, what girls have in mind, misshalls.org. And WMHD Production Services, providing high-definition video production on location, post-production editing and graphics, as well as full DVD duplication services, WMHD.org.
And here we are back with Ricky from Massachusetts. Ricky, you're on. You're good.
I am?
Yeah, yes. You're good. Good to go.
Thank you. You're good, too. You're very good, too, Alan.
Thanks, dear.
Here's my big, bad question. My father was a sort of a famous type. And
how famous? When he, give us a hint.
Rather. Yeah. Rather famous.
Okay, go ahead.
It was funny, and he played the piano.
Oh, I know exactly who you are.
See that?
Am I allowed to guess?
Sure.
You're the daughter of Victor Borgia.
You are correct.
Okay. Wow. Okay. Go ahead.
Except I might give you a little pronunciation.
Yeah, Borgia.
Coaching.
Yeah.
Borgia.
The Borgias was something
for
else.
The heart, correct. Yeah. There were a lot else. It was so not like my family that I have to distance myself.
Okay, great.
Here's the thing. When my father died, I did an interview with CNN. They called. Everybody called. And, you know, we're all in mourning and not making a lot of sense. But I had said that he was, when we came, we had just come home from Denmark the night that he died. But he had his last morning in Denmark and his last night in America, which suited him because he was very, very much proud of and in love with being an American citizen. And also he loved Denmark. So flash forward. I did an article for a local magazine, and my brother-in-law changed what I had said from he had his last morning in Denmark and his last night in America to he had his last sunrise in Denmark and his last sunset in America, which I thought was much better. But I used that line in the article that I wrote, and then I sent it around. It was in a local. Sent it out, and my sister called me and said, "You used Jim's line."
brother-in-law.
Yeah, in your article.
Of such things are family wars made.
I'm saying to myself, "Well, okay." It's my understanding, though. And I feel bad. I usurped his, but I don't. How does the rule go on that?
Well, it sounds like It sounds like he was, you know, sort of filling an editing function. And you never for a second thought that you were co-writing this work with your brother-in-law.
No.
So, you know, thank you for the edit. But you
that's
know.
About where I'm at. But does it once it's printed, does it become my property now?
I would say yes.
Yeah. If he was just editing, sure.
Yeah.
Oh boy, now they're going to sue me.
No, I don't think.
Well, why?
I don't think
why would they sue you?
I don't think they can
sue.
There
must be a lot of money in it.
Well, I don't
no,
think
not.
Ridiculous.
I don't think they can sue you anyway. I first of all, it wasn't anything that they registered. Second of all, it's arguably a short phrase, which may in and of itself not be copyrightable.
Absolutely.
There you go.
And Ricky, I have to tell you that every family has these things. The Shartok family was divided into two parts because somebody once accused somebody of having come to the cemetery and stolen the flowers off Bubba's grave. And
no!
Yes! And they didn't talk to each other for the next 30 years until they're all gone. That's what happens,
that's
Ricky.
Thank you. We're still talking. We're all still talking. Everything's still friendly, but I just want to know where I stand.
Thanks, Ricky.
Thank you.
Great. That was a great story. Okay. Let's go to Bill and Lennox. Bill, you're on.
Okay. Hi, Alan, and thanks for taking my call. Love your show.
Thank you.
My question is, a couple of years ago, made a film for a private client. I was paid privately for the job. And it's never been distributed publicly, but now what I would like to do is kind of do a remix using some of the same footage and then just sell it to the general public, not so much through a distribution house, but at festivals and on street level, just that sort of thing. And I'm wondering if I can use that same footage as I had used previously.
What was your contract with the client?
Well, it was no real contract at all. There was nothing written. He hired me to do a job for an event he hosted. It came out wonderfully. We're on good terms. But there are people who appear in the film that I might have trouble tracking down for permissions, and I'm just wondering you know, what that the legal status of that effort would be.
Now, you know, I'm not on the panel. I'm just here as the moderator. But you have two choices here, it seems to me. One is to follow the Shartok rule of no.
I love that rule. I heard that. That's a good rule.
Or you can follow the Westwood rule, which is a really good rule, which is go and ask them.
That's right.
And ask them if possible.
Well, the issue would be, I mean, the person who hired me to do the film certainly can't speak for the rights of all the other people who appeared in the film. There were interviews. There were just off the cuff kind of comments people made. And I think I would have trouble tracking down all of those people.
Yeah, and they all knew that they were doing this for a private film, correct?
That is correct.
You probably don't have permission from them to do something that you're going to then distribute to the public. So I would try to answer your second question first. I would try to get permissions from all of these people before you do anything. But sort of depends who they are and what they say. In terms of the old client, technically you own the copyright to all this stuff because you never signed it away.
Right.
However,
in terms of courtesy.
Right, of course.
You know, asking him might not be the worst idea.
Right.
Okay.
Alan's shaking his head.
No, I'm not shaking my head about that. John from Albany called. He's the VP of the local Audubon Society and would like to get into contact with the caller. And I don't know how we would do that because we don't know who the caller was.
If it's John, my old law school buddy, and I think it might be.
Is that his last name, my old law school buddy?
Yeah. Send me an email.
Could I ask a further question?
Yes. Sure.
Kind of a point of
sorry, Bill.
Some of the film was shot on public property at a public event, and some was shot on private property, also a public event. Is that going to make any difference to, if I say, well, it's easier to say you're sorry than ask permission, would that help me at all?
Again, it depends. It depends who they are. Appear in a film, I mean, a photograph would be no problem, to republish. But to have them in a film speaking, I really do think you would want releases.
Okay, Bill, we're going to let you go because we got a lot of people behind you. We only got a few minutes left. Okay, we'll go to, okay, Michael in Schenectady. Michael, we're moving along fast now. Go ahead.
Okay. I did a documentary a few years ago. That involved me, a director of photography, and another guy who kind of did all of the paperwork and whatnot. Both of those guys walked away from the project. I have the film completed, and I'm wondering what rights do I have to seek distribution and what do I not have?
Well, again, did you have any sort of contract with them? Did you have any internal agreement?
No contract whatsoever.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you're at least the co-author of the work. How much actual work in the creative end did these other two people do?
The only thing the other guy did was set the shots, but he would get the direction for me. He was more of a photographer, and we were doing video, and so I kind of like directed him on how to set the shot and using the rule of thirds and whatnot.
Yeah.
So I directed him on how to set the shot. I did all the questioning during the interviews. As well as on-camera speaking, and I also did all of the editing as well.
Yeah, I mean, you should put it out because you're definitely at least a co-author, and the worst that can happen is if, the other guy who worked came after you, the worst that you would have to do is give him half of the net proceeds, which, if it's a documentary...
But he should go zero. He should go ahead and register this though in his name.
I would start out with the assumption that you're the sole owner and register it.
Okay, and so when I register that, and I'm not from this area, so can you tell me where I would go to register something like this?
Copyright.gov is the site, and you would register it as an audiovisual work.
Okay, Michael, you're done. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. I'll go to Bill in Schenectady. Bill.
I have a question about the first sale doctrine, which is that
says that basically if you buy a book or a DVD or similar work, that the royalties are due the creator only on the first sale, and if I sell the item as used, that that's fine. There is apparently a case coming up in the Supreme Court that does not appear to hold on works created outside of the United States, and that in fact we may have to pay royalties every time we sell a DVD player or a cell phone or any other device that has software created outside the country.
Okay, here we got a bill. To Paul.
That is in front of the Supreme Court, and we'll wait and see what it says. It sounds like it's a textbook company that raised this, trying to block the sale of works that were acquired outside of the country. And it sounds like the textbook company had a very weak case. I'd be surprised if the Supreme Court sides with them based on what I heard. But it doesn't automatically mean that if you sell it, you have to pay royalties. I think it means you might not be able to sell it at all. But, you know, we'll wait and see. I mean, it's a very, very interesting question. But I think they're going to uphold the first sale doctrine for stuff that's purchased anywhere.
And, Bill, I wish I could give you more time. I can't, and thank you very much.
I do, too. I have a question about Joan Baez, but it'll have to wait till the next
You mean
time.
The first? You mean the cover of the cover of the Berkshire Eagle the other day?
No, I am in possession of an authorized recording of Joan Baez's first commercial performance. It was made with her permission and the other performer. Called Folk Music Legitimate and Illegitimate, which I recorded in about 1960 at the Club 47 in Boston.
Wow.
And I would like to know if I can donate that to the Smithsonian or to the Library of Congress or someplace where it could be available to the public. I'm not trying to make money with it. I just don't want to get sued because I'm trying to be a good guy.
Well, you could certainly, privately give them a copy, and then let them worry about it.
I know one thing, that Pete Seeger has sent all his stuff to the Smithsonian.
Yeah.
So I'm sure you can.
Yeah.
Do you have written permission from the parties and Joan?
This
and the
was
other?
1960. No.
Yeah.
Okay.
We didn't even know we were there.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no problem certainly, giving it to the Smithsonian, and if they, want to get into the issues of how to distribute it, they will. But there's no problem, in the first instance, if you just giving it to someone else.
Okay, Bill,
thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Let's go to Nettie in Gilderland. I'm sorry, Nettie, you're going to have to go real fast. We're running out of time here. Go ahead.
Okay, Alan, thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
This is about my son, who is an art student. He's a graduate art student out in San Francisco.
Yep.
He's in the process of building a website, which will have all of his artwork. He's creating his portfolio. My question has to do with images of real people. For instance, he wants to use an image of a very prominent athlete, let's say Michael Jordan. He's created this image not from a photograph, but from his own imagination. Can he put that image on his website without any copyright repercussions?
Absolutely. You can.
Easy for you to say.
Yeah, you can. You can't, you can't then slap it on T-shirts and start selling T-shirts.
Yeah, okay, that's... But, yeah, you can't... He can't go out and sell posters of that, right?
Correct.
It's sort of... As long as it stays art... So
yeah.
You could do numbered prints, for example.
Right.
But posters, probably not.
Yes, he told me that, but I just wanted to make sure.
Yep, that's pretty much it. I mean, it's considered art, as long as it's considered art and looks more like art than merchandise, he's good
yes.
to go.
So, Nettie, what you're worried about is that when he gets sued, you have to pay?
Absolutely, Alan. You got it.
I understand it all too well. Thanks, Nettie. Yeah. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Let's go to John in Albany. John, you got 1 minute. Go.
Hi, this is John from Audubon Society of the Capital Region.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yep.
And I just wanted to let Chandra know if she wanted to go to our website or Google Capital Region Audubon, then she can find President at the email us at president@capitalregionaudubon.org, and maybe we can help her out with some of the questions that she might have.
Fantastic.
That's great.
From the Audubon side.
Great, great, excellent. Great. Thanks a lot, John. Appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you.
Let's go to Dan in Cairo. Dan, you're on.
Yes, I was looking to get some information. I'm combining training technique with horses and music. And if it's an actual very specific technique that I'm using.
Okay, we're out of time, so you guys are going to have to go real fast.
You cannot copyright a training technique. I get this all the time. You can write literature and about the training technique and copyright that. You can give the training technique a zippy name and trademark that. But the technique
Dan
itself,
system.
Yeah.
Okay, but right. Okay, Dan, we have to go. I'm so sorry. Next time, call up when nobody's calling in the first third of the program. Okay.
Thanks a lot, Dan.
And I'm sorry to Debbie from Glenville, and we're not able to take her call today, but that's okay. Get it? Okay. Now, here is the point. And that is, we are just about out of time. Support for the Box Pop comes from the Arkell Museum at Canon Jaheri, presenting pastoral and parkland American landscape paintings with works by George Innes, Winslow Homer, Albert Bierstadt, and more. ArkellMuseum.org, Curtis Lumber, providing kitchens, baths, doors and windows, paint, flooring, and more since 1890, with 21 locations in New York and northern Vermont, CurtisLumber.com. Empire Exhibits and Displays, Albany, New York, custom exhibits, interactive displays, and commercial casework for trade shows, events, museums, and corporate interiors, EmpireExhibits.com, and Boyden and Perron, Amherst, Massachusetts, providing foreign and domestic car, truck, and SUV repair services, and a Massachusetts inspection station for over 50 years, BoydenandPerron.com. Thanks again for joining us on the Vox Pop. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Colleen O'Connell. Terrific she was. Our producer is Patrick Donges. I'm Alan Shartok. And Paul, where is your talk tonight?
The Arts Center in Saratoga Springs.
The Arts Center. You want to know more about Paul and everything he does and his intellect, go there. So anyway, now, stay tuned now for a news update. And thank you, Bill Westwood, and thank you, Paul, for being here.